Hi, everybody. We want to thank our sponsor, Legion M. They are a wonderful company. We love working with them. You can go to their website, Legion M. They're also on all the various socials. They do really fun meetups. You can talk to directors. You can become a part of the projects they choose. They even have a program right now where you can help them find great movies to support. So go to their website to learn more. We also want to remind you that we have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies. Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies. And Jesse and I are the foundational members and charter members of the Margo Martindale fan club. So this is a big moment for us.
Oh,
I'm not kidding. That is not said in jest.
No joke in any way.
Oh, so incredibly sweet.
It's genuinely a thrill. It's the only thing that makes me sad is that we don't get to be sitting in a room with you, because then we could actually, in front of you, get onto the floor and
we will.
Yes, ma'am.
And we will.
Ma'am, yes, ma'am. But man, it is such a thrill, genuinely, to have you on.
Thank you so much.
We absolutely adore you. And for everybody who knows you from 7,000 different things, you know.
Yes, I am that old. Thank you.
Yes, that's true.
No old jokes, because you and I are the same age.
There you go.
Okay, good. No old jokes. No old jokes. Where are you born in?
We don't do old in our house.
Leonard, are you born in 51?
December 50.
50? Exactly the same age, really, but you know, I'm maybe 6 months younger.
No big deal.
No big deal.
Well, you look better than I do.
Exactly.
Oh, no, I don't.
do you still consider yourself a proud daughter of Texas?
Oh, yes, I do. Even though I've lived in New York City for 46 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
And what do you think that brings to your personality, to your persona, to your performances?
I the sky is very big in Texas. Mm-hmm. And I think that really helps a child to know that there's so many places to go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, such a big world. As is Texas was a big world, even though I lived in a very small town. I think Texans have a sort of, if I can do it in Texas, I can do it anywhere. Which sometimes isn't true, but yeah.
Yeah, but that's a great way to springboard onto the right track for mm-hmm. success. Having that confidence.
It's an incredible gift that I got from my mother, but from honestly where I was born, who I was surrounded by, and yeah, it was a true gift. Well, I don't even know why I was confident, but I was shy, and I was. That's such a lie. Probably I wasn't shy, but I, not in my own backyard, I wasn't shy, let me tell you.
But you were a cheerleader too. I mean,
I was a cheerleader. I wore a body brace for all of during my teens somebody who has something like that that's happened to them, it helps with their popularity sometimes. Mm-hmm. When you seem to have overcome it, which of course I didn't, but 6 years of that, not all the time, 24 hours a day for 2 years. And then, And then it kind of waned off for until I was a senior in high school.
And
so that also changed my perspective on the way I looked at the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would think it would.
Yeah, yeah.
How? Can you articulate?
Well, I think I knew that when people looked at me, people, strangers, not my friends or the people in my hometown, they would feel sorrow for me. And I would go, no, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
This isn't me. I'm fine. So it made me kind of have maybe more insight into others. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a part of the we call the invisible illness crowd. I have lupus and mixed connective tissue disease and a whole bunch of stuff. My joke always is that I collect autoimmune diseases for fun, and it is that thing where people go, "You're so brave." And you go, it's what else? What else are you going to do?
What else are you going to do? That's exactly right.
It has shaped how I see other people and how I see the world in general. And that I think that I probably take things in stride just because it could always be worse. You could be in a hospital. You could be, there's a hooked up to more machines. But you know, I think that in general, it's made me a better person. Though I wouldn't have minded not going through it. Definitely wouldn't have minded that. It's probably made me nicer.
Me too. I understand that. Yeah. I love hearing that from you. That, it's sort of a secret. It's sort of an odd little secret.
It is, yeah. One of my best friends and I joke that we're in the badass crippled unicorns club.
That's and right. I said that one day about, and boy, I think I had to be retracted and cut out.
Yeah.
Well, some people get it and some people don't. Some people relate to that kind of bravado, even if it's false bravado.
Yeah, it's
just and self-deprecating, outlook toward their conditions, and some people, get uptight at that.
Yeah,
and we don't talk to those people very much.
If you don't have a sense of humor, you will lose your mind.
That is very true. It's very, very true.
When did you start acting and performing? When did that become a part of your life?
I started acting. I mean, truly, this is no joke. And I produced little plays in my backyard and I played all the leads. I gave the sorry parts to the neighbors. The alley gang is our alley gang. I directed starred in, played the men's and women's parts. So I was doing that in elementary school. And I wasn't doing it at school. I was doing it in my playhouse on my little picnic table. And I played Curly and Judd in Oklahoma. And I played Ain't No Annie. I gave Laurie to somebody else.
It's very Shakespearean to take on all of these roles and to be playing different genders.
I don't think I've ever talked to anybody who played Curly and Judd in Oklahoma. I mean, that's...
Well, here you're looking at him.
It's a big day. It's a big day.
And what inspired you to go to University of Michigan?
I had gone to a tiny little college in my hometown, which happened to be, it was a little 2-year Methodist school. It was not a junior college. It was a 2-year Methodist school. And it had one of the most famous drama teachers in Texas there. All the kids from Houston came, all the kids from down, not all, but like Tommy Toon, Sandy Duncan, all the people kind of came to be with this woman. And I was fortunate enough to have kind of grown up around her.
Wow.
And so I got, I soared at that school and I got a bunch of scholarships to go away. 22 to be, in fact, to get to, I could have stayed in Texas and gotten a full scholarship any to any state school under being, whatever you want to call it, handicapped or what, that's what they called
sure.
it then.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I, my teacher, Zula Pearson, she had gone to Northwestern University. I thought, I think I want to go to Northwestern University. Of course, I got a full scholarship from University of Michigan. So I went, I chose Michigan. I had no idea where I was going. I knew nothing. And that's how I chose Michigan.
Wow.
Oh, how I chose Michigan out of all of those was that Jimmy Stewart and Helen Hayes were on the cover of their brochure. Now, what they had to do with Ann Arbor, I have no idea. But I knew who they were.
I think that's a perfectly logical way to make a decision.
Yes,
if I saw really, them, I'd do the same thing.
Yes, that's what I did. Yeah, yeah.
And but during your summers, you worked at Harvard.
No, just one summer. That was the summer after Ann Arbor. I went to Harvard. I didn't go to Harvard. I can actually say I went to Harvard, but I didn't. I got master's credits for acting there that summer, the summer of 74, right before I went to university, right before I went to New York, mm-hmm. and did Three Penny Opera with Christopher Reeve.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, then you did go to Harvard. That counts. You have credits from Harvard. That's going credits. To Harvard.
I don't know where I can find them, but I do.
Mm-hmm. You know, at a certain point, people don't ask for degrees. They don't ask for the degrees. Well,
yeah, okay. I say this to Jesse all the time. I've never been asked to show my diploma from NYU to anybody at any time. Well, again, I'm not running for attorney general, so perhaps standard being held here.
Absolutely, no question.
Man, oh man. And what was it like in Michigan? What was it like at the school?
At Michigan, it was hard to get into the inside at first because I'd worked all summer trying to work on Fatata Tita in Caesar and Cleopatra, and I thought this is going to be easy. And you know, I wasn't even looked at twice because their leading actress was Christine Lotti, and Christine played Fatata Tita.
You know, Christine, it's just rude, isn't it? She didn't ask permission. That is.
It took a while to, I finally landed in a big musical. They do a huge musical there, school-wide, called Musket. And I played Rosie Bryce in Funny Girl. Now, I didn't really know much about the Jewish world. So my friend Jamie from New York gave me the Jewish American Princess recording. And so I listened over and over to that and kind of got caught up.
Oh yeah.
To play Rosie Bryce.
Honestly, as a Jewish American princess, I can tell you, it takes a little get, you have to get used to it. You find your place.
That's right. But I was wildly successful in the part. So
of course you were.
That opened the door to being cast in a lot of things.
Wow.
And was your ultimate goal New York and the theater there?
Leonard never even thought about New York. I didn't think about anything.
You were just doing.
I was just doing.
Mm-hmm.
I had no path to New York. But I my mother helped me. My father had died the year that I went to New York. Went to Ann Arbor, and it was sudden. He died of a heart attack at 57. And my mother said, "You, honey, you got to go." That's all she said. You just got to go. And
that's a good mama.
Yeah, she was absolutely spectacular. And And I don't know how I got off on that, but whatever. I don't
remember. You're talking about getting to New York.
Getting to New York. And yeah, and then and the next thing I knew is that I'd gotten this offer of this job. At, I got offers of jobs all around in summer reps. But the Loeb Drama Center, which is was called at the time, was doing three penny opera. They did a whole season there. And most of the kids from a lot of, not most of them, a bit, quite a few kids from Juilliard came and did that. And so I thought, ooh, I'd love to sing. Yeah, I'll go and do that. Yeah. So I, and then I met a bunch of people there and I moved to New York with them.
I mean, did you, when you started off on your own, I mean, I never left home, so I have no basis of comparison. I grew up in the suburbs of Manhattan, and I went to NYU, and I was still living at home then. And then I just kept doing what I'd been doing, writing, you know, and pursuing my path. So I've never experienced that feeling of going someplace new and not necessarily knowing anybody there, and not necessarily having a safe haven when I arrived. Tell us about your entree to New York City.
Well, I had met, I had been sort of seeing this guy at Harvard, not Christopher Reed, but another one, a very nice looking man, or boy. And all of a sudden his girlfriend showed up. I thought I was the girlfriend, but obviously I was the summer fling. So she and I became best friends. We're best friends to this day. And she went ahead of me and got an apartment for another gal at Harvard that was working at Harvard, the three of us, and we shared an apartment together, 73rd in Amsterdam.
Hey!
We were at 79th in Amsterdam.
My parents have a photo when they were going to move here from New York. They have a photo in front of Zabar's where they're both frowning and looking like they're about to cry. In their first year of marriage, they nearly lost their shirts because all they did was buy everything from Zabar's. They've always told me this. Apparently you can't buy everything from Zabar's. You can't go to Zabar's every day and still have money at the end of the week. And they said, how quick was it that you realized you had no money left? And you thought, where was it all going? Oh, Zabar's.
It was about a year into our marriage. I was freelancing. Alice had quit her job and I was working at home. So we were together all the time and we were having a kind of an extended honeymoon and not being terribly responsible. And we had an accountant who was kind of like your crotchety uncle, and he came to do our taxes and he said, where's all this money going? And
directly to Zabar's.
We didn't spend it on clothing. We didn't spend it on travel. Where on earth could all this money be going? It was going on the American Express card to Zabar. So I needn't explain further.
No. That is so funny because that really, it's still to this day, every now and then we'll order from them. Like we'll splurge and we'll order from Zabar's just so the two of them can have those moments, taking them back to the early
it's
days.
So much fun. It's so, yeah. I like getting the baskets at the holidays and sending them. Yeah.
Oh, great. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
This is an unsolicited testimonial, by the way. Should anybody be listening from the FCC? which I doubt they are.
We are not sponsored by Zabar's, but we would love to be sponsored by Zabar's. Oh my gosh. So you move in and there's three of you. Even that is lovely. Your own little sisterhood.
And yes.
Makes all the difference in the world. But what was it like being, because my parents are from New York. I'm still overwhelmed when I'm there.
Let me just say, I was petrified. I had no idea that I would be petrified. When my best friend, she was a dancer. She started Step Studio. And she was the girlfriend. And she would work at night, you know, dance during the day and work at night. And I, sometimes she'd find me at the corner at Last Pharmacy, the corner, I think it was Last Pharmacy. That was when at 73rd and Amsterdam, sitting in there in my gown and robe until somebody came home because I was scared to be in the apartment by myself. Oh. Yeah. What I did for the first couple of months was play a $10,000 pyramid, and I put tape on the thing. So I thought, I can win this money if I just play this enough times. I'll get on this show. I'm going to be rich. I auditioned for it and I was rejected. So,
How dare they?
I was too serious. They said, gotta have personality. I thought, are you kidding? I'm playing this game.
Listen, you had your eye on the prize. It was not about being cute. It was about winning that money. I respect that.
So you started to enjoy some success off Broadway. And I find it astonishing that in your early years, I mean, how old were you when you played Big Mama the first time in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof on Broadway?
The first time I played Big Mama was at University of Michigan. So I was 22 or 23. And when I played it on Broadway, I played it that I am 69. So let's see. I believe it was about, I think I was in my early 50s, which honestly is not too far from what she would be, I don't think.
Right. Right.
Of course, she could be 60. She could be 70. But I think that at that time, early 50s was old.
Yeah. But even in college, tackling that part and what that part calls for in terms of not just the performance, but the presence that you have to bring to the stage and to the audience in your 20s says something about your what you can project and you still project.
Whatever it was, she lived inside me so long to do it again, it was just a delight to do that the last time I did it, because she'd been ruminating and growing old with me. Yeah. And, I knew who she was by then.
Yeah.
I love that.
And you were in the first off-Broadway production of Steel Magnolias, am I right?
I was in the first production of Steel Magnolias.
Oh, my.
The first production of Steel Magnolias was at the WPA Theater, which was off-Broadway. It was a hit. It moved to the Lucille Ortel Theater, the Theater de Lille at the time, and became a gigantic hit. He says he wrote it for me, but, you know, I came with the play. So I had an inside.
But that, I mean, again, it's, I know you won't give yourself credit for it, but you have such a powerful presence. And, you know, when you think about something like Steel Magnolias, and I grew up watching the movie, of course, all of those women terrified me in the best way possible. But each one, I mean, they come through the screen. And certainly as a little kid, I just thought, holy crap, they're all real. And if I'm naughty, they're going to find me. You know, it's...
Yeah. And they were all real. And those were all Bobby Harling's. Those were the women in his mother and sister's life. Mm-hmm. It's very true. And Truvy was based on a woman that he knew, and I think her name was Liz. That's one of the people he used.
Mm. Well, I'm going to jump around just for a minute, because just last night we got to watch Uncle Frank, your newest film. And
my only complaint is that you're not in it more. That's my only complaint about the film.
But
my hair looked great.
Oh, yes. Oh, chef's kiss. Perfect. Perfect.
But what you bring to that part, and I don't know if you can in any way objectively understand what I'm about to say. But what you bring to that part is an intangible thing that makes all the difference in the world. We don't get to see, the protagonist is played and very well by Paul Bettany.
But that good old Southern boy.
He's from the deep South.
That's right. Of England. Yes, yes.
But
it was wonderful, yeah.
But those moments with his family, though they are brief, are crucial. It's crucial that you understand the relationships and that you understand the depth of the relationships. And you do because you and Judy Greer and Stephen Root and Lois Smith.
Can I just say, the cast in this movie is ridiculous.
And we all knew each other.
It's my dream team. It's one of those, when we got the email talking about the film, I looked through and I just went, I love, you know, thrilling to watch you all together.
We had a blast.
Well, I can imagine. I can only imagine. Were it not you, were it not those other actors that we know and recognize and welcome seeing, it couldn't possibly have the same impact. And yet when you as an actor read your sides, when you get submitted the script, you might well have said to yourself, well, there's not a lot here.
There was not a lot there, but there was that one scene that it was just a tiny little scene that I wanted to be able to say.
Mm-hmm.
When I watch movies, so to give people just a brief description of the film, it's essentially about my mom said it best. She said it's a coming of age story, but it's not the person coming of age you think it is at the beginning, you know.
Yes.
And you've got Sophia Lillis, who is fantastic.
Oh, isn't she?
This young woman.
Fabulous. Oh, my goodness.
Ridiculous. Folks, if you don't know her name immediately, she's in It, the first one. And that's what really got people talking about her. And she's such a talent. And I'm excited. She makes me excited because I know I'm going to see such incredible performances out of her.
She's truly got the gift.
She has those eyes. It's one of those eyes. But you would think that it's her coming of age. The truth is it's Paul Bettany's and essentially him coming out to his family. And, you know, these kinds of movies always make me emotional, maybe because the way you grew up, the way I grew up, having different illnesses and disabilities, you know, anything that makes you different can be a hindrance, or it can be something that makes you grow. It can also do both. It can be good stuff and bad stuff. And so whenever you watch someone who just needs and wants to be accepted, you want to reach through, whether it's a documentary or fiction or something you see in the news, you want to reach through and say, you're good enough. You're perfect the way you are. I love you. Don't change anything. You know, and I very much feel that that's what you and several other folks in the film have the opportunity to do.
That's my crowd of actors, you know, mm-hmm. which I loved being. I mean, Lois and I'd worked together. Steve and I'd worked together. Steve Zahn and I'd worked together. Mm-hmm. Stephen Root and I knew each other, and I don't believe we'd worked together. We knew each other well. And Lois and I, of course, and Judy and I. So there, it was quite, but Paul, I just loved. And Peter, and they were just, you know, sweet, sweet, wonderful. Yeah. It's a great message.
Yes.
It's a story you've seen, but I think it's told with such freshness. And it's really beautiful. I mean, it's very pretty.
Are there many movie sets you walk onto the first time on a given shoot where you don't know a lot of the people
No, there are. No.
By this time, I would think.
We have a short list of legends. When I say that you've been on our list, I don't mean that as a figurative. I mean literal. I have a list. And there are people who thrill us. Beth Grant, one of my favorite humans in the world.
Love.
Dale Dickey. You know, and love getting them on the show, like these are legendary humans. And so for us, the only one we're missing right now is Ann Dowd. And I promise I will hunt her down. But it's because you are these magical people who can be put into any film, any TV show, and you make it a million times better. Also, it's just a joy to watch you, whether you're being mean, you know, or nice, playing the mama who really is that mama character where you want her to be your mom. You know, it's a gift you guys have, and it is a thrill because, first of all, you've worked with everyone.
You know? I have.
Everyone.
I haven't worked with Tom Hanks. Mm-hmm.
How dare he? Someone get Tom on the horn. Tom, this is some BS.
I imagine it was another family reunion when you made The Hollers. with John Krasinski directing you from a Dim Strout script.
We all love that film. My dad really loves that film. And it is one of the movies that he touts, constantly recommends to everyone.
I loved that film more than I can tell you. Mm-hmm. I loved it. And I love John. And I love Richard Jenkins.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
You know, so it was, you know, it was just fabulously fun. And everything you want them to be. I just loved it.
When you're in, now so many people know, and I'm going to use a term that maybe you like and maybe you don't, but a film filled with character actors, of your stature and experience, people don't necessarily realize that you gained that experience primarily on stage, that if you didn't have the training that you have under your wing, you couldn't do what you do. Can you explain that in layman's terms?
Well, I don't know. I love being on stage. It's been a while now. And I keep thinking, oh, I really would like to do that again because it's a different experience.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I think it shows you how to arc a character, mm-hmm. how to arc a performance because where it's supposed to go. I think that's really important in doing a movie or a 10 episode television series. Mm-hmm. It's all come in handy that way. It's also come in handy with the way I'd like to look because it's all about illusion. Mm. It's really about illusion. I want to give the illusion of something that can easily be done on stage. So to try to put that to take what you know and tweak it a bit for this world. It's fun. I find movies and television. I like because you don't do it every day.
Mm-hmm.
I like the freshness of it.
Right.
What was it like when you first started doing film and TV, when you went from doing stage to film and TV?
I guess seamless, mm-hmm. kind of seamless. I did do The Rocketeer was one of my first movies. And Alan Arkin said to me, you know, you got it. You got it. So, but what I didn't know is that you didn't have to act when the camera wasn't on you. A lot of things you learn that nobody
knows. Yeah.
I'm going through the whole thing, you know, cameras over there.
It just means you're into it. It just means that you're giving it your all.
Yeah.
I think it's nice.
Yeah, but don't use it all up on the over the shoulder shot.
Don't waste it.
Wait for the cameras on you.
It's so true. I started to learn that a little bit in Lorenzo's Oil, is don't use it all up in the rehearsal.
You have to pace yourself.
You have to pace yourself.
Some people know you best from television, of course, where you've made such an impact on so many shows, in so many shows. And you've had shows that had promise but sort of sputtered out. And, I'm sure you put every bit of effort, the same bit of effort and commitment into those that you did into the shows that clicked, you know, like Justified, which you joined in progress in season two. And I wonder, what do you think makes a show deliver the goods that people are looking for?
Writers.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, period.
Mm-hmm.
Good writing.
Good writing.
You can't.
It ain't good writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So The Good Wife and The Americans and the ones that have brought you the most attention and acclaim are well-written, well-produced shows.
Extremely well-written. Both of those shows, extremely well-written.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it exciting? It's exciting that in the past few years, TV has become just the most exciting place, because you have the best of the best of the best putting all of this effort in. You have incredible writing, you have incredible producers and line producers and showrunners. And it means that instead of just getting one great movie, you can get multiple years of a fantastic show.
It's true. I mean, it's a very exciting world, this streaming television, I find. Also, it's alive in a way, you know, live. Like what I'm doing right now is, I don't know where it's going. I kind of do, because it's real. But, you know, I'm doing the first episode right now.
Oh my.
Wow.
Are you allowed to talk about it?
Well, it's impeachment. It's American Crime Story.
Ah, oh, yeah. My goodness. Well, that's exciting. That's, again, exciting. Man, that's...
And who are you playing?
Lucianne Goldberg.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my. Back to your Jap roots.
Well, I think that she was born in Boston, and she was Episcopal. I don't know. She married Goldberg, but her name was Steinberger or something like that. So I don't. I'm staying out of it. Yeah, I'm back. I'm back. Let's just say that.
I married a goy who has learned all of our terrible Jewish jokes. So now even he will say Malton Bloom, Blatt, Steen, Gold, Inski. I'm like, that's my boy. He gets it.
That's fun.
Now, this past year, though, you took on a guy's, I don't know that I've seen you do before. You may have played some real life characters before, but not as high profile as Bella Abzug in Mrs. American. And I'm of an age where I remember clearly the real Bella Abzug and all the other women, you know, Shirley Chisholm, all the other women depicted in that miniseries. And wow, to nail it so completely and become that very distinctive woman, that was no small achievement.
It was a challenge, let me just say.
Mm-hmm.
It was a challenge. It was a challenge that I thought, maybe I shouldn't do this. but I thought, I'm scared, so maybe that's good.
Yeah.
I worked for 2 months before I even started. I gathered and watched and watched her and watched her and watched her and watched her. My husband said, I will be glad when this is over.
Just because you have to immerse yourself in Bella Abzug doesn't mean that he has to.
That's so true.
Except that's the way it turns out.
It is the way it turns out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you were in
and
a
again, what a cast.
What a formidable ensemble.
Good grief.
Oh my God.
Good
what
grief.
Cast. What a cast. And very well done. Very well written. Very beautifully put together, I thought. Mm-hmm. And I, another group of women I had a blast with. We really had a wonderful, wonderful time. Wonderful time. Supporting each other, wishing for the best in each other.
Yeah.
Which was great, you know.
Which is the way it's supposed to be.
It's the way it's supposed to be. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That, and of course, it's always interesting with something like that. I'm watching it and in some ways experiencing some of these people for the first time. And there's my mom. My mom is 77. She's remembering every single person.
Oh, bet she does. Yeah.
That very current way. And it's the same, you know, we all watched together Trial of the Chicago Seven. And it is an interesting thing to sit with someone who remembers it like it was yesterday. My parents, who both, each one of those names, when you say any of those people, it's like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
And then there's my husband and myself learning about them, experiencing them in some cases for the first time, in some cases just not so familiar that we would recognize their hair or mannerisms, you know. It's
well, doing that for me, it was an education.
Sure.
Because I was in pursuit of acting. I was not in pursuit of politics, or I wasn't very involved in, mm-hmm. and I feel guilty about it now, but I wasn't involved. I was, all I cared about was, can I get that job? I need to get that job.
Yeah. It's real life though.
It was real life. And I also, you know, didn't grow up in a world that was really surrounded by that sort of thing. So I found a great education in doing that part and that show.
Mm.
Shirley Chisholm, I remember vividly. And Bella, I remember vividly. And probably Betty. I think,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Phyllis, I wasn't even on my radar.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
then you lived a quieter life.
Yes, I lived right on the Upper West Side, a quieter life.
A quieter life.
Now, Margo, I have to ask you, why is it, this is a rhetorical question, really, why is it I love you so much in that segment I loved so much in Parry Chitem?
Well,
and for those who don't know, Parry Chitem, Paris, I Love You, is an anthology film made up of many segments of various lengths and various tones and styles of storytelling made by a wide variety of filmmakers from around the globe. Yours happens to be written and directed by Alexander Payne, and
it's one of our favorite humans in the world.
And
mine too.
And I don't even know how to describe the woman you play.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was doing a little independent film, and I don't know, outside of Philadelphia. You know, nobody ever saw. And I got a call from Alexander Payne. I'd met Alexander on About Schmidt. He brought me in there because he had seen Lorenzo's Oil, I think. And he said, I just want you to know, I just really wanted to meet you. He said, because I think you're so pretty, which was so, I thought, what an odd thing to say. And he said, but I'm not going to cast you. And I said, okay, well, it's great to meet you too. And so I get a call from Alexander, and he says, Margo, this is Alexander Payne. I mean, somebody given him my phone number. I think my agent asked him, and I said, well, hi. He said, you remember me? I said, of course I remember you. And he said, well, I've written a movie for you. He said, I've never written for anyone before. There's no money in it, but will you come to Paris and do it? And I said, yes. And then He talked a little bit about it, and then he called me back and he said, "Oh, by the way, do you speak French?" I said, "Oh, not a word." And he said, "Even better." So she was a lonely woman who was a mail carrier in Colorado, and her dream was to go to Paris, and she had been studying French. And to go to Paris by herself. It was such a beautiful, Alexander directed me like I was a silent film person. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So he would tell me what was happening emotionally, where I should be going emotionally. It was fascinating and fabulous because it was all voiceover, except for one word or two.
Mm. And what a voiceover.
Yeah.
What a voiceover.
People, if you haven't seen the film, people, just trust me.
Give it a go. Give it a go. So many good people involved.
I loved the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And we went to Cannes and I sat with Alexander and he said, "This is fun, isn't it?" So it was so much fun. He said, "Because if you hate one of them, the next one is very soon."
Right.
Just wait, there'll be another one along in a few minutes.
Yes, exactly.
Hang on. One thing I can boast. Can I boast a little here?
You go for it.
I can boast that we do have one thing in common. Other than residency on the Upper West Side, you present my former. We have both been on BoJack Horseman as ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness! Really?
Yeah.
I didn't watch all of them.
Nor did I.
Okay.
I've got you both covered. It's okay.
Okay, because Raphael, who I love. Is Davi Waller's husband, who wrote Mrs. America.
Yeah. So I
spent time with Raphael in Toronto. Well, but that's pretty cool.
It is cool. It's cool.
You get in the cool club if you've been in that.
Oh, yes.
Well, I certainly hope so, because I have very few other credentials that would admit me.
Me too.
To that club, but they did hold a Leonard Maltin award ceremony.
Yes,
where my name is on the marquee behind me, and the award itself is called the Malty, and
it's a whole thing.
And it's a whole episode involving these awards.
Oh, I have to say, what season is that?
I don't remember. I'll look.
I was asked to go in and voice exactly one line of dialogue. So I only speak once and briefly at that.
But his face is on the whole thing. His name and his face just keep popping up. It was very, very funny.
But you, on the other hand, are exalted on that show as the esteemed and beloved Margot, which we support.
Yeah, we're all about it. Yeah. It was 3 years ago. I can't believe it was 3 years ago. It was 3 years ago. So
do you get a lot of feedback from younger people from that?
Absolutely. I guess they recognize me from my cartoon.
Obviously. But see, I'm sure, you know, when you've done so much, it is one of those fascinating things. You try to guess how someone knows you. So somebody's going to walk up. I mean, like with my dad, it'll be okay. They watched the Star Wars VHS. And you can guess from a mile away, this kid's going to come over and talk about Star Wars.
Oh, you can always guess. You can almost always guess.
Right?
And what are some of your leading contenders in that category?
Well, The Americans is big.
Sure.
I guess Mrs. America became very big. Justified is still up.
Sure.
And
sure.
Sneaky Pete is extremely large and walking through airports.
we always lose him in security because someone will go, "What movie should I watch?" My mom and I are halfway down the terminal and he's back there going, "Well, I did just try." Yeah, like, "No, Leonard, no, we have to leave."
Very funny. I know, I talk to way too much. My daughter always says, "Please don't talk to the people."
You're just giving them what they want, you know? Giving them what they want.
You have made such a tremendous impact because, not only because you're so good, but because you have done so much in multiple media over a span of time. I enjoyed watching you in Blow the Man Down. Nice little film.
I thought it was a remarkably good first film.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Those two women worked on it for 10 years.
And it was really another beauty, that main coast and all of that. I loved it. And I loved, you know, the cast. And June Squibb and I were neighbors for years in New York.
Oh, I can only imagine the two of you.
For years.
It's sort of like when you talk about Lois Smith. I'm trying to imagine you and Lois Smith and the amount of trouble the two of you could get into.
Well, you know, and all of us enjoy a cocktail.
Well, so the ladies who lunch, it's okay. I like it. I like it a lot.
What I showed Blow the Man Down to my class at USC, and one of the things I think they enjoyed the most was the specificity of the New England town that they were depicting, even though it wasn't a specific town. It was a you know, fictional place, but it was so apparent that it was all drawn from truth.
That it was all right there. It was sitting right there. Yeah.
And
just beautiful. I just thought it was beautiful. And I love those seamen or whatever they were called. The singers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes. The shanty.
The sea shanty. Yes, that's right. Sea shanty.
You don't get to hear too many sea shanties.
No, you really don't.
Not enough, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
Is there anything else you have coming up that you can talk about? Is there anything you would like to, as they say, plug? Is there anything that you're excited about?
I have, quite a few episodes of Your Honor with Bryan Cranston that I think comes out in December. I think it's the Kings or one of the producers, and I think it'll be really good.
The Kings are the folks who did The Good Wife and The Good Fight.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't even know what I have coming out.
That's what happens when you're so busy.
Seems like there's something else, but I can't remember what it is.
That's okay.
Now, it seems to us, I mean, it's always a different perspective, but it seems to us like you are working all the time, nonstop. Is that the reality of your life?
Well, not in this last year.
Yeah, right. Well,
yes.
This year doesn't count. This year doesn't exist.
Yes, it's been, I've been really fortunate. But I mean, I started Your Honor in November. I finished it last week.
Oh, wow. My.
Now, nice. I think I only do 5 episodes, but you know, and I started, I got this job I'm doing here now last October, and I started shooting the first day Friday.
Wow.
So it's nuts.
Yeah, that's the technical term.
It's nuts. Yeah.
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 Well, okay. It's encouraging. It's heartening to know that production is slowly ramping up again.
Yep.
And that it is bringing people back to work, and that it is it holds the promise for audiences, for television watchers and moviegoers, that there will be good new stories to latch on to.
And if we get more you, that's all right with us too.
Yeah. Okay, good.
We're very okay with that. Thank you so much for making time today.
You two are beyond delightful. I mean, it's almost like we really were in the room together.
I promise you it will happen. I will bring a Zabar's basket. And okay. I gotta say, my mother is also a member of this fan club. She'd be mad if I didn't. She's at the third Malton, the Alice Malton, who's our queen Alice. She's also a huge fan. But we really thank you so much for making time.
We
love everything you do.
Thank you.
You are so talented. And it really is an honor for us to speak to you.
Really?
Are you a social media being? Can people follow you online?
I think my daughter does it for me.
That's why you have daughters. That's
true.
Our purpose.
You know, I tried for a while and then I thought, why am I doing this? I don't even understand it.
Well, in lieu of that, just turn on your TV set.
Just look
for
Margo
flipping
Martindale.
Around channels, streaming channels, and you'll find Margo Martindale. She's there somewhere. It's a rerun of Million Dollar Baby. It's a new episode of the Bryan Cranston Show. You'll find her. And if you find her, you'll love her, as we do. And Jesse, we're not as ubiquitous as Margo. So where do people find
us? No one could be as ubiquitous as Margo. I am at Jesse Malton. You are at Leonard Malton on Instagram and Twitter. You can always go to leonardmalton.com for movie reviews, book roundups, and all kinds of good stuff.
And we are on Patreon.
Maltreon.
Where we receive and gratefully receive support for what we do. And if you'd like to join that elite group, go to patreon.com/Malton on Movies.
Hercules has a real cheese problem and we got it. You know, it's expensive. It's an expensive habit. I'll tell you now.
Patreon.com/Malton on Movies. Thanks again, Margo.
God bless you both and have a wonderful holiday season.
Thank you so much.
Same to you. Continued success.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Today's episode of Malton on Movies is brought to you by Legion M, the world's first fan-owned entertainment company. If you love movies as much as we do, why not own a piece of them? Find out more at www.legionm.com.